Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
On June 15th, six of the U.S. Supreme Court justices told God he was wrong to just recognize two sexes. He was also wrong to not recognize that some people are just born gay. And to them, it was apparent that the writers of the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 just didn't understand what the word sex meant either. So those six stepped out of their judges' robes and put on the mantle of legislature and, quote-unquote, helped out God and those 1964 legislators to understand the real world. Was it their role? What impact will this decision have? Those are just a couple of the questions we'll delve into today. My guest is Peter LaBarbera. He's president of the Chicago area-based Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. Thanks, Peter, for being with us.
Thanks, Diane. Thanks for the opportunity.
So what's your mission?
Our mission is to report information that the so-called mainstream media and various pro-homosexual and pro-transgender elites either don't report or actually distorting.
Distorting. You mean the media, even the mainstream media, is distorting some of the news?
Well, what I like to say now, Diane, is that the mainstream media is now a branch of the LGBT queer movement.
Yeah.
They've pretty much given up any even a pretense to having any sort of impartiality or objectivity, and they just pretty much are the propaganda arm of this movement.
Yeah. So what is the role of a judge, no matter what the level? Is his job to be a legislator, to write law, or is it to interpret law?
Well, it's to interpret law, and this was an incredibly egregious abuse of that, this Bostock case, Diane, because essentially the Scalia wing of conservative judicial interpretation is called originalist or textualist. In other words, the common sense, ordinary usage of the time that the law was written is what is interpreted. In other words, if whatever is common sense, how they would interpret the law, how they wrote it, is how it should be interpreted. And this decision, which was authored by Neil Gorsuch,
who said he was a contextualist during confirmation hearings.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's absurd to call this decision anything close to that, because what they did was essentially reinterpret, redefine civil rights to add gender identity, which is transgenderism, and homosexuality under the guise of sexual orientation, add it to the definition of sex discrimination, which is absurd and obscene, because in the case of transgenderism, that wasn't even really a known entity at the time, 1964, when that landmark civil rights legislation was passed.
Right, and homosexuality was illegal in all 50
states. Yeah, it was anathema, and transgenderism was just pretty much so far out there that it wasn't even a concept.
Exactly. As you said,
it might have been maybe in some academic circles, but nowhere else.
Right. Even homosexual activists thought they were kind of off the wall, those transgenders. So we have Gorsuch, as you said, authored the majority ruling, which, there were six. So we have Gorsuch, and of course we have the four liberals.
Roberts.
John Roberts. He was the other one that was. So we have the four liberals, John Roberts, and Gorsuch. Those were the six.
Yeah, and Roberts also, in his confirmation hearings, he famously said that his role was to call balls and strikes. But he certainly didn't just do that. He wasn't an impartial umpire in this one.
Again.
He joined with this radical redefinition of the Civil Rights Act and sex discrimination.
Yeah, he's getting a reputation for being that way, for sure. Really troubling, though, that Neil Gorsuch is the one who was confirmed to replace Antonin Scalia. And Antonin Scalia would never have decided the way that Neil Gorsuch did in this case. And so,
he would have railed against, in his very inimitable style, he would have railed against this decision. And it's just, what's so sad is that a lot of people have now lost faith in the whole confirmation, the conservative judicial project, because we're told that we're getting, the Republicans are appointing originalist judges who don't rewrite the law, and then something like this happens. Very much the same way where people lost their faith in John Roberts when he ruled in favor of Obamacare by calling it a tax.
Yeah.
It totally runs contrary to how they portrayed themselves right. in their confirmation process.
It absolutely does. And even the liberals always get their liberals, their way out leftist judges. And we have to go on the promises given during confirmation hearings. And too many times, those promises are not kept. And John Roberts and Neil Gorsuch are two examples right there. And it's very troubling. Just the fact that it is not a judge's role to make law, which is exactly what they did in this. They changed the law to where it, now it is forced upon employers, because this deals with employment. So employers are now forced to hire homosexuals and transgenders, no matter what position they hold, no matter what the company. And it is apparent that Christian business owners are not exempt from this, because the Boston case was, it was three cases put together in one, and one of those cases was dealing with a funeral home, and it was owned by a Christian business owner. And this Christian business owner was not exempted from leaving this man who all of a sudden decided he was a woman in place. He had been fired. That's what brought about the case, the Harris funeral home case. So the Christian business owner had no legal, has no legal right to fire this man who comes in and announces he's going to become dressed as a woman in the future.
Yes. In other words, a man pretending he's a woman, mm-hmm. and they have no right to take action based on that extreme turnaround in their employee. And it's one thing if Congress did that. It would still be unconstitutional, in my view, and it would, and the American people could fight against it. But this is a double whammy. Number one, it was written by the judicial wing, which is now basically asserting itself as a legislature. Mm-hmm. And secondly, this shows the implication of this bill. According to Sam Alito's dissent in the Bostic case, there are at least 100 sex discrimination laws on the federal legal code, which means that every single one of those now is open to a lawsuit and the redefinition that we saw on the Bostic case. And as you said, one of the cases of the three that were in the ruling was exactly what we've talked about for years, Diane. Me and you have been talking about this for more than a decade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the implications? You're a small restaurant. You have a host. All of a sudden, he tells you, Diane, I'm not going to be... I'm not going to be Larry tomorrow. I'm going to come in as Laura,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be in a dress, and I'm identifying as a woman, and that's how I want to live.
Yeah.
And the next day he comes back as this very strange-looking woman in a dress named Laura, and you have no recourse, because to take action against him would be to invite a major lawsuit that could put you out of business.
Exactly.
And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah,
and also restrooms and locker mm-hmm. rooms, female restrooms, locker rooms. All you have to do is say that you identify as a woman, and you could be a man allowed in those restrooms,
mm-hmm.
and to say, no, we don't want this in our company or our store,
right.
Is to invite a lawsuit. And we know that the gays and the transgenders are very litigious, and they
absolutely.
Will sue.
Yeah, they will sue. If they can't get their way, they'll take you to the courts where the judges have taken on the role of legislator, which is totally unconstitutional, but the legislative body has not fault against this. I mean, seem like there could be some ethics charges or something brought against these judges who are consistently doing this, rewriting the laws rather than interpreting the laws. But we have
would have to be impeached.
Yeah, impeachment.
And that's very, very rare, and it has not been very encouraging to see the response of some Republican senators, like Senator Thune in South Dakota and Senator Grassley in Iowa, basically not really complaining heavily about this decision, and in fact almost supporting it, whereas at least Josh Hawley, the new senator from Missouri who replaced McCaskill, he came right out and said what it was. He said these judges are legislating.
Mm-hmm.
This is legislation. This is not a judicial decision. According to Hawley, this is quote-unquote legislation.
Which is illegal for the judges to do, but who know? Who, you know, how many Americans? I mean, Americans just are not educated on the roles of judges, the roles of legislators. They're not educated on the balance of power, on the three branches of government. They do not know. Thanks to our education system, they do not know how our government is supposed to work. Now, mentioning Josh Hawley, he was one of three. The other two were Mike Lee of Utah and James Lankford of Oklahoma, who pushed back because it was an attempt in the U.S. Senate to get the Equality Act passed using unanimous consent, and it was blocked by those three senators. And that happened, you know, a day or so after this Supreme Court decision. So there's going to be ramifications. and there's going to be a bigger push, or a harder push, I think, to get the so-called Equality Act passed in the Senate, since the U.S. Supreme Court has handed down this, you know, this outrageous decision.
Yeah, and that, of course, would automatically, I mean, that legislation is so radical that explicitly inside the bill, as we've talked about, I think, on your show, it explicitly says that gay rights, this Equality Act, gay transgender rights, would supersede the Religious Freedom Restoration mm-hmm. Act, which is mm-hmm. a bill, which was a law, which was enacted to protect people's religious freedom.
Right.
But the Equality Act basically says that their bill would, if it became law, would supersede that. So, I mean, they're pretty bold these days in saying exactly that they really want to quell, squash religious freedom in this country.
Yeah, they don't want the Religious Freedom Restoration Act to be used in any kind of lawsuit. Is that the one that was used successfully with Jack Phillips in Colorado? I can't remember if it was or not. I think it played a part, though.
I think it must have. I can't recall exactly now, but yes. And in fact, in the decision, I read the entire Bostock decision, Diane, and Gorsuch says precious little about the implications, whereas Alito, in his dissent, goes into all the multiplicity of areas where there's going to be the repercussions of this, and, mm-hmm. you know, some of which we've discussed here. But Gorsuch does mention, well, there's this thing called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is supposed to be a super law above the other laws to protect religious freedom. But he really didn't talk much about it, and it's just an embarrassing decision for somebody who replaced the great Antonin Scalia. This is just a sad, sad day for our nation.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Did they happen to mention anything about bathrooms in the decision?
Alito does. I think that there's just sort of a casual, I think in the majority decision by Gorsuch, it sort of dismisses, you know, this isn't about bathrooms. He says something like that. Whereas Alito goes into all the implications of this because, as I said, there are so many sex discrimination laws. If the Supreme Court is now 6-3, on enforcing this radical reinterpretation for employment, well, it seems to me they're going to do the same thing for competing in women's sports,
mm-hmm.
where we're seeing biological males being allowed to compete against weaker and slower female athletes,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, dominating these sports, even though they're ostensibly, quote, transgender females.
Yeah.
They're really biological males. This could have huge reverberations for that arena. And then you've got the bathrooms, the locker rooms,
mm-hmm.
you've got the employers, you've got the schools is a huge one, Diane, because the schools take federal money.
Yeah.
And we've seen that wherever federal money is used, then the laws go along with it. And so that's why Hillsdale, there in Michigan, brags about mm-hmm. not taking federal law because they don't want to be forced into doing anything that violates their charter. But most schools in some form take federal money.
Some kind of federal dollars, whether it be
whether it's loans or direct
loans, mm-hmm.
direct grants or teacher training or whatever.
Yeah.
So all those schools, you could have your child could have a male teacher in, say, you know, sixth grade who decides he's going to come in the next day. You get a notice that he's coming in as a woman, his new identity.
Yeah.
And you will have no recourse
as a parent.
And you're
not even told about it until after the fact your child comes home and tells you about it.
Right.
You don't receive a note from the school saying this is going to happen on Monday. You know, Mr.
It's casting everybody who adheres to normal, everyday, pro-God, heterosexual normalcy values. It's going to be cast as a bigot akin to a racial bigot.
Yep. Yep.
That's what this does.
Yeah, it
will do.
Mm-hmm, it does. And I just want to throw this out there. You know, Pennsylvanians think it doesn't impact them. Well, Allentown's Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center, this is from Philadelphia Gay News from July 2019. This Bradley Sullivan LGBT Community Center joined 32 other LGBTQ rights, quote unquote, rights organizations across the country in filing documents supporting trans woman Amy Stevens in her U.S. Supreme Court case. That was the transgender, quote-unquote, woman who was really a biological man who worked for the funeral home that, you know, brought the lawsuit against the funeral home. But Allentown's Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center filed an amicus brief in support of this confused individual.
Yeah,
so,
who's since passed away, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So
I think another plaintiff as well. So, yeah, these are very sad cases, and it's just, even if it would have been if Gorsuch wouldn't have joined, it still would have been 5-4 because Roberts is pretty much showing that he's sort of trying to be the Mr. in the middle guy, and So I think they lied. Both he and Gorsuch lied or dissembled. At the very minimum, they dissembled in their confirmation hearings because they sold themselves as originalists,
or
like
they, or
Scalia,
maybe,
and then look what
maybe,
they've done.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Or maybe during that time they were, but then they've come under, although Gorsuch hasn't been in there all that long.
Right.
You know, but they're under pressure, and they see what's happening. And I know this theory's been thrown out there. They see what's happening across the country with all the name calling and all this kind of stuff, and they don't want to be subject to that. Don't want their families to be subject to that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, also they might just be going along with the zeitgeist. We know how the media is.
Yeah.
We know what they're trying. I mean, that's how. Let's face it. That's what happened with the Obergefell gay marriage decision, which both of us have been speaking out against for years. It's 5-year anniversary coming up on June 26th,
yeah.
Diane, and that was very much what they went along with what Obama was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that we're becoming a victim of this media elitist, I mean, sort of a deep state judicial culture.
Yeah, I know, and that's scary.
Whereby the media and the narratives that have been pushed by the left are really allowed to take dominance over the silent majority of Americans. And all of a sudden you wake up and you realize, wow, I may be forced as a small businessman to employ a transgender pretend woman.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's shocking.
Yeah, the ramifications of that with your other employees, the ramifications of that as far as the interactions between this transgender person and customers that this person comes in contact with. I know that was the concern of the funeral home director, is the interactions with grieving families that this man would be having as he's dressed as a woman. Did you say that Amy Stevens has passed away? Is that what you said?
I believe that's true.
I believe he has passed away. Wow. So, you know, they've made a lot of inroads. LGBT activists have made a lot of inroads over the last number of years. And I believe it all mostly began, or pretty much began, with the Romer v. Evans case in Colorado.
Yeah.
And could you give us some info on that, having to do with they passed a constitutional
amendment? Well, I'll go through my short, quick summary of the cases.
Okay.
I think,
okay.
Diane, we had, I think Romer v. Evans, if I'm not mistaken, was 1996.
It was in the mid-90s,
Not sure about that, but it was the Colorado had passed a law which was basically trying to preclude everything we're talking about. It was a state law which would have essentially negated the idea of special rights based on sexual orientation. I'm not sure if gender identity was in that one.
No, I don't think so.
But it was a popular measure, a ballot measure, which even though the odds were stacked against them, the conservative pro-family side won and they passed a law. And the homosexual lobby went to court, and they had it stricken down.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that case, we learned that you can't organize. We've lost the freedom to organize on this issue politically. And that was famously, remember, Diane, I think both that and other cases use the term animus.
Right.
It was said that decision or that ballot measure was based on animus against homosexuals. Well, that implies that we hate them.
That's why you did it.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas this was merely a measure for people trying to protect genuine freedom in this country, true civil rights, which are not based on changeable, aberrant, sinful behavior, but rather skin color, of course.
Right.
And okay, then now what was next? Then we had a hate crimes, but that was not a ballot measure. I mean, that was more like a federal law. But I think Lawrence v. Texas got rid of the sodomy law in Texas, the anti-sodomy law in Texas, which has huge implications because, of course, sodomy laws were on the books when America was a new republic.
Yes, absolutely.
So how can they now be unconstitutional? And also remember that the Lawrence v. Texas case, which essentially was used to say that all anti-sodomy laws were unconstitutional, just 17 years prior that was the Bowers v. Hardwick case, in which a sodomy law in Georgia was upheld.
Yeah.
And so the liberals love it when they support precedent being overturned when it's something they disagree with. But when it's something they don't agree with, they're all in favor of it.
Yeah.
Now they would say that the Obergefell gay marriage decision, that's, you can't touch that. That's sacrosanct.
that is in cement now and it can't ever be changed. But as you just said, the Boward case, and then 17 years later, Lawrence v. Texas overturned the Boward decision.
Yes.
Yeah.
17 years later. And also, I always forget this one, Diane. I don't know if you remember. Remember the Baker case in Minnesota on gay marriage?
No, I don't.
I believe that was 1972. I may have the date wrong. It was very early. Of course, the homosexual lobby today would say, why did you, we weren't ready for that. You know, a couple homosexuals, I believe, a homosexual male couple, I believe, tried to fight for the right to get married. And that was, I believe it was just pretty much slam dunk dismissed by the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so what happened to that precedent?
Yeah.
That was in the early 70s,
wow.
And so now we saw how long it took, 50 years, some 45 years to get that overturned.
Right. Right.
There's no rule of law in this country because they talk about stare decisis, which is that thing of the precedent being honored, but it's a one-way street.
Yeah, it's disturbing when you see how things have advanced, and the LGBT activists are so ready and anxious, really, to go to the courts because they know the courts have sided with them too many times. And rather than work with our elected officials, the legislators, they go to unelected judges to get their way.
And I want to say something to that about the Kavanaugh dissent in the Bostick case,
which
I read. And what's troubling about that is he goes through the whole procedural thing, what we're talking about. Hey, this should have been Congress and not, this is not the role of a judge. And he completely obliterates that, so he destroys it. But then what I found was so annoying was in that decision, he says, he actually has a line, I'm going to paraphrase here, well, this should be done in Congress. This is something that we should be signed in Congress, and there should be a signing ceremony. He talked expectantly about this same thing that the Supreme Court just did being passed by Congress. He reveals himself as very pro-gay.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's like, why is it the role of a supposedly impartial judge to tell us that, to basically say, I mean, he didn't talk about, like, Congress may pass this, Diane. It was almost like Congress would have passed it, and we should have just waited for Congress to pass it. So even Kavanaugh comes off as not really, to me, impartial on this issue of homosexuality.
Yeah, he's almost sounds like he's anxious for that signing ceremony for the...
You'll be very troubled. Just go to the last two pages of his dissent, and I was very troubled by that.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not ready yet. What, like 170-some pages or so, the total thing?
Yeah. So Kavanaugh's not really with us, I think, philosophically, I think. And I it made me want to go back and read the Obergefell decision. I mean, he wasn't there for Obergefell, was he?
No, he wasn't, no.
Yeah, he wasn't there for Obergefell, but it seems to me like he might have been on the other side on that one.
Yeah, it's always my concern with any new judicial nominee is their stand on this issue.
And of course, the Republicans don't ask them very upright. I mean, what's interesting, it's always weighted to the left. The Democrats are in full force. How are you going to rule on abortion? Are you against a woman's quote right to choose and all that baloney?
Yeah.
And then they press them on homosexuality and even transgenderism. But then the Republicans, the so-called conservatives, rarely challenge them on the abuses of sexual orientation law and all that. So it's always a one-way street,
they
and it's always to the left favor.
Yeah, so is there anything we can do? I mean, at this point, it's unelected judges who have handed down this decision. The legislative body, is evident, has no guts to start any kind of articles of impeachment. So we're stuck with this decision until another case comes forward similar to this. I don't know. Is that what we have to do?
Well, there has to be some sort of congressional action, but Trump,
don't
of course, forgot to mention Trump, his heart really isn't in this at all because he basically said it was a powerful decision. He did criticize it, but
even though his DOJ,
he didn't sound like Josh Hawley, you know.
But his DOJ, I mean, that's what he said. But even though his DOJ sided with, I think, with a funeral home, I think it was.
And we can't forget that Trump's DOJ was on our side on this, but
they consist.
It's just the left knows that everything gets done in the courts, and they're going to now we're going to see flood of lawsuits based on sex discrimination.
Yeah, that's my fear too. Ever since Obergefell, we've seen this. The fight continues. Obergefell did.
And we of course can't give up. And I think now more than ever, we need to get also back to the core truth about homosexuality. I think one of the problems is that so many people have bought the idea that sexual orientation, so-called, is innate, unchangeable, and really much like race.
Yeah.
I mean, and just think of the whole culture. I mean, we're celebrating when people, quote, come out as gay and everything. Mm-hmm. And so we have to come back and say, look, there's so many people who've left homosexuality behind, who've overcome this problem in their life. And of course, with transgenderism, we've seen so many people. And on that issue, they themselves say that it's fluid.
Yeah.
And so we see people detransitioning. In other words, they once thought they were a man, thought he tried to be a woman, then he said, this isn't working out, and he went back. And so there's all
the
about, it's really all about changeable behavior,
right.
And it's masquerading as civil rights.
As civil rights. That's scary. Thanks to the education system, thanks to the media, the lies being perpetuated that gay is okay and that it's perfectly normal to be gay. So how can folks contact you?
Thanks, Diane. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm at Americans for Truth, all written out, F-O-R, AmericansForTruth.com or .org.
Okay, AmericansForTruth.com or .org.
And I'm also on Twitter at my name, Peter LaBarbera, and that's spelled Peter, P-E-T-E-R-L-A-B-A-R-B-E-R-A.
Okay. Yeah, you're on Twitter a lot. But, yeah, I encourage our listeners to contact you with any questions or any concerns or any thoughts on how they can push back on this. So thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you, Diane. God bless.
Okay, God bless.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.